I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things. If the acoustics of this recording sounds different to the normal one, and by the normal one I mean the one where I'm in a spare room, not in front of a live audience in Malvern, it's because I'm in a car. This time I'm in a vehicle. So only because I'm outside my office, not in my office, because the office is definitely too echoey, and I was self-conscious about that. Didn't want to ruin it orally for the listeners. So I'm in the car.
Cars are quite nice for recording because they are pretty damped, dead.
Lots of textiles. Sound. I'm surrounded by textiles.
Lots of textiles. What car are you in?
I'm in the Caddy California, Volkswagen. Ah. The one berth camper extravaganza, which I seem to be coming alarmingly attached to the more I spend time in it. I really enjoyed it.
Have you slept in it yet?
Yeah, three nights.
Have you?
Yeah, three nights in. Yeah.
Wow.
And hashtag...
Is it cosy?
I am loving it. I have to say, I'm loving it. But it helps that it was a full moon and very calm. And I'm in a nature-ridden area. So, can you say nature-ridden? I don't know. It makes it sound like you're against it.
Absolutely drenched in nature.
Yeah,
just... too much nature, if anything.
Ridden with...
this reminds me, after last week's podcast... By the way, thank you to everybody who came along to the live recording and made up the audience. Listening back to it, it sounded great. Like... I thought there's a danger it might sound like village cricket, you know, all that sort of just gentle clapping. But no, it sounds like, well, we did have quite a decent crowd, didn't we?
Oh, real, real.
Just over 200 people in the room, but it sounded terrific. And particularly when they all, as one, shouted Folds.
That was a strong return, like we'd rehearsed it, and I promise we hadn't. And I think it was the same for Sport. Was it the same for Transit? Or was it the same for
Transit,
Sport?
Yeah, everyone dived in there. So, thank you to everyone who came along, but also thank you to everyone who listened to it and gave us some very lovely feedback and said that it sounded... I mean, we know the sound quality sort of needed a bit of work.
Yes.
In the room and in the recording. We probably needed more time to do a sound check and things, which sadly we didn't have. But everyone liked the vibe of the show, the fact that it had the audience there and it sort of changes the atmos a little bit. So thank you for all the positive feedback about that and all the people who listened and went, ooh, that sounded all right, actually. I might come to the next one. There will be a next one. We're hoping we'll be able to announce when and where very soon.
Yeah.
But I was talking... at the live show about my badger problem.
Oh, yes, badger. You were, yeah. Again, that sounds a bit odd when you say it like that, but yes, absolutely.
Oh, got a problem with my badger.
Yeah.
But it's getting worse. The bloody thing, there's this little bit of wooden trellis sort of fence and the little bastard has smashed through it.
Well, they're powerful creatures. They're shoulder barges.
They are.
Yeah.
They are proper shoulder barges. They are... I don't know. It's just the badger was coming. Badgers are the kind of creatures that can come back from the bar with four pints grasped in two hands.
Oh, what when the pint is very, very dewy? And you know if you go for four, the slippery nature between all the pints is so dangerous because the pressure you've got to apply... forcing all the pints inwards, you know that one of them could eject at any point.
Any minute, yeah.
And turn into a goose from Top Gun scenario. where it ejects and lands and it's dead.
Yeah.
So so there is that.
Well, just very quickly, the badger situation attracted a very informed message from a patron of ours called Thomas Cowley, who said the best way to dissuade badgers from coming along their run through your garden, and foxes too, is to piss where they're coming through.
Yes.
You're the bigger predator, and they'll not come through because you've marked it as your territory. This was recommended by a commercial gardener who sends her male employees to problem gardens to address the issue in this way. We live in woodland and keep Indian runner and Muscovy ducks. So far, we've not lost any to foxes and badgers, which I put down to my maintaining a piss perimeter around the area.
piss perimeter.
And that's the only reason I wanted to read that out, is because Thomas used the expression piss perimeter, and I couldn't stop giggling about it. And I'm going to do this. Thank you for the advice, Thomas. I've started wazzing in the garden at night. Not in the daytime.
Are you upping your water intake as well in order to be able to do the full perimeter?
Yeah, just absolutely gallons of the stuff every morning, and then so I mean, if anything, it's causing subsidence.
Gosh, piss
in the flower beds.
Piss perimeter. It reminded me of when we were 17. We used to go into town, and we'd occasionally congregate in our cars outside a closed council building near the local swimming pool. And it was always empty because it was after hours, late at night. One of us will have had the doors open playing probably Robert Miles' Children. But anyway, I've just remembered a friend of mine who used to enjoy not driving and sitting in the back and drinking Castlemaine 4X. He always needed the toilet. And we got out one day, surprisingly.
You say these things might be related.
Here comes the science. And he used to take great pride in trying to wee the entire perimeter of this council building at night. He just thought it was great. And we used to marvel at how his technique, because he would either try and wee longer or walk faster, which is more of a sidestep. Anyway, one day, so I'm going for the record. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do the whole... It's a big building, this, just so you know.
Right.
He got almost all the way round, and then this fire door opened, and a security guard just stared at him and said, "Can you just not do this? Please don't do this." And he was...
Was the security guard a badger?
It was a real man.
"Please stop doing this. It means I can't leave the building."
Yeah, his short sleeve white shirt on, and he wasn't aggressive or anything. It was just like, "Can you not do this?" Because obviously, it must have known that this was happening, but never witnessed it and thought, "That's the guy."
An interesting technique for security enforcement, rather than aggression, sort of plaintive despair. It might cut through in certain circumstances. Could you please just not do this?
I think it would cut through for American police officers much better. Because you go in so aggressive that it immediately makes the whole situation more aggressive.
Just turned up with a bullhorn and just went, "Could you just put down the gun, please?"
Yeah. I've had a busy day. You're the fifth person who's angry with a firearm I've had to deal with today. And I've got to say, out of all of them, you're probably the weakest, ugliest-looking person. So can you just put the gun down? And by the way, one of your tyres is bald, so even if you don't put the gun down, you're going to get done for the tyre anyway. So, look, let's just do this quickly, and then I'll go and eat cliche donuts or whatever you want me to do. I've got a centre console full of cashew nuts, and I need to tear through those. I think it could work. I honestly think it could work.
It's worth a try.
I'd like to see an initiative for several months, just to see if there was a change in mood amongst the cities. I don't know where I'm going with this conversation.
No, I had something else. I had some other sort of housekeeping to do, and now I can't remember what it is at all. I'm sure it'll come to me. Yes, I know what it was. We mentioned that someone had seen one of our stickers on Cromer Pier.
Yes.
Well, the culprit's come forward.
Oh, admitted it.
His name's Jack. I won't give his surname in case it turns out that it's really illegal to put stickers on Cromer Pier, but Jack is one of our patrons.
Oh, Jack, thank you so much for your guerrilla advertising.
So whenever we mentioned it, he said, "Only just caught this episode. I was astonished to hear that someone had spotted my Cromer Pier sticker. I was given two stickers at Goodwood and knew that I had to put one in pride of place."
Oh, my God.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Jack.
That's amazing. So he really felt the responsibility of those two stickers and what they needed to achieve, didn't he? Mm. I like
guerrilla marketing. Yeah,
I like that a lot. I'd love to see one on a very, very expensive car.
No, because when we were wandering around the Goodwood site at night, realising that we were unsupervised,
Oh, yes.
We were saying, wouldn't it be amazing to just... I think we were going to stick them on the underside of really expensive cars so that it wouldn't be so the next time they went in for some repair work that, you know, Nick Mason's mechanic would go, Nick, those two twats off that podcast have put a sticker on the underneath of your GTO.
What, like a ghetto under-tray stickerist?
Yeah.
I could... Well, yeah, not that a 250 GTO's got an under-tray, but you know what I mean.
But I just think those stickers were not the most expensive, so I can't vouch for the quality of the adhesive, and it may damage paintwork.
But if someone got them inside the... You know, some cars have, classic cars anyway, have number plates behind a piece of glass.
Yes.
If someone could get one in behind the piece of glass on like a Citroen DS or the Citroen SM or...
Oh, yeah.
Well, even, you know, even the FN2 shaped Civic, which has got all that perspex at the front with the Honda badge behind it. I don't actually know if you could get in behind there. You probably couldn't. That would be impressive.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Worth a try. I mean, do it to your own car. Don't do it to...
I don't have an FN2 Civic. I've got the heart out of one. But
I don't either.
I've got the wiring loom for one. I can see it from where I'm sat now. Yeah, I have, yeah.
Has this come for free with an engine?
Yeah, it was part of an engine that I acquired from a salvage company. And that's the engine.
You still got that bloody Rover Honda V6 that we went to Telford to collect?
Yeah, I have. I have, actually. Yeah.
That was a weird day.
Yeah, it was. Was that our very first Smith & Sniff proper episode? It was.
Well, we'd filmed ourselves in that golf cart in America. And then we kept saying, hey, when we're back in the UK, we should stick some GoPros inside an actual car and we should...
do something.
You know, record ourselves. And then we kept saying we'd do it and we never did. And then one day you rang me up and went, I've got to go to Telford next week.
Pronto.
Pick up a Honda V6
yeah.
from a Rover 800.
Yeah.
My Allegro project. You want to come and we can record ourselves. And I think I had a Kia Sorento press car. And I went, okay, well, let's do it in the Sorento. You get a Honda V6 in the back of that.
Which we did. I'm glad you remembered. I couldn't remember what car it was.
It's amazing I did as well. But there's the perils of the nerdish mind. But I do remember it was definitely a big Kia SUV. And it did the job. But then we got the engine off that man who was moving to Japan.
Oh, yeah, I wonder if he ever moved to Japan.
I don't know.
What was his name?
He very much liked Japanese things because it was impossible to ignore. His house was full of, like, Japanese art and stuff.
It was. And his garden was full of Rover 800s.
Yeah, a Japanese-based car. So, yeah. But then he said, oh, I've got to get rid of all my stuff because I'm moving to Japan. And I went, oh, do you know people out there? And he went, no.
No, that's true.
I think I said, do you speak Japanese? And he went, no. And I was thinking, quite an intimidating thing to move to Japan if you don't speak Japanese, because outside of the major cities, you can't bluff your way through Japanese, can you?
No, that's
the
thing.
You know, sort of...
I doubt you can wing it.
German or something. You go, well, those are all the letters that I recognise. I'll just pronounce it the way I think it's pronounced, put a bit of an accent on, and hopefully it'll sound correct. But Japanese, you wouldn't have a hope.
No.
Pronouncing the kanji. So what do?
You have to make sure you've got your own allotment so you can grow your own food. You probably have to order the seeds for the food from Amazon America.
Yeah.
So that you can understand the language. Well, mind you, you've got lots of Google Translate these days.
Yes, that's true. But when was this? This was
a decade ago. I reckon it must have been.
We made the mistake of rolling the cameras all day.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
We drove from... Did I come up to your house? I came up to your house, picked you up.
Yes.
We drove to Telford.
Yes.
It's quite a long way across England.
Yeah.
Picked up the engine from the man who wanted to live in Japan, even though he didn't speak Japanese, and then drove all the way up to your house. And we rolled cameras in the car pretty much the whole time. And then ended up with an unmanageable amount of footage. I think we salvaged tiny bits of it for early Smith and Sniff videos. But anyway,
I wonder if most of it was crap.
I just wondered if you'd still got that engine.
I've still got the engine. It was up until about half a year ago, still in the same garage that we slid it off a huge piece of wobbly MDF wood and into it. His end, he had an engine crane to load it into the Sorento. At my end, I had three large pieces of MDF and an old pallet, and that was as far as it went.
I don't think I have the footage anymore, but I'm sure there's one part of the in-car when we're driving back, and you can see this huge 2.7-litre V6 engine in the boot, sort of covered in towels for some reason.
Yeah, he did give me... Do you remember? He did give us two really large towels. I've still got them, and a stank of dogs, because he used them for drying his dogs, and I can't remember what dogs he had, but they were big.
They were big. I don't think we saw them, because they were so big and barky that he shut them in a room.
Yeah.
And they just made intimidating noises from the other side of a door. But
that happens every time. Every time I go to somebody's house.
You can have these towels. I won't need them in Japan because I'll be using Japanese towels. No different.
I'll be using Japanese people to dry my back with.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's okay.
That's how it works out there. It's very ceremonial. So I just remember, I think I said to you, have you got an engine crane? And you went, no.
No, I don't. And then, never had. Have one. I should have one. I don't have one. It's something I ought to buy, I think.
I'd never really realised the use, the pure utility of the engine crane in moving engines about until we tried to do it without one, and it tumbled out of the
it did
it tumbled out the back like a big oily boulder
onto soft wood. I've got to use sacrificial soft wood. That's my engine crane. Sacrificial softwood that you can drag around. It's easier that way. But I would like one of those. Is it a Faro arm or of the incredible robotic arms that they use in factories?
I
would love one of those so I could just quickly program it to where the car was. And he says quickly program. I think therein lies the issue. But quickly program it to pluck it out the boot of a Sorento without tweaking the rear window in. And then, because you know,
going too far and punching the windscreen.
Yeah, because you know, it's like a huge digger bucket with those teeth on it. Just one little tweak from a tooth on a piece of glass or something like that is enough to shatter and destroy lives or dreams. Yeah,
are they those programmable things? Is it very similar to what were those things called in the 80s? Big tracks.
Yes.
It was a big track.
It was a big track. who made those?
Hasbro? I actually bought one for... They reissued them, the little ones.
They did.
I bought one for my boy when he was little. He didn't find it very interesting. I found it more interesting, but he'd sort of wander off and I'd be busy going, no, look, if we do it again, we'll be able to get it to go round there and then round the leg of the chair. He just
that's it. It was six-wheeled, wasn't it? Big track.
Yes.
That's right.
And yeah, it was...
Was that early coding?
What do you call it?
Was that early coding?
Basically it was, wasn't it? Because I can't remember. The turning, was it done by degrees or by sort of like a clock face? How you programmed it to turn, it was... I forget now.
And it had a keypad on the top, and then did it have like a really special looking headlight?
Maybe the big one did, the little one that I have somewhere. No, don't think so.
No,
just makes a lot of beeping noises, sort of, kind of noises.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Unattractive sort of beeps, but are you so are you selling that V6 or are you just hanging on to it in case you need it?
I'm in two minds, actually, Richard. Because I've got two engines, we kind of built one good out of two with a lot of spares. And then, I've gone to quite a lot of extent finding unobtainium bearings for it and that kind of thing. And then had it all... it's all been blasted and it's beautiful. It's surplus at the moment. I can't decide whether or not I'm going to wait and put it in another car. But to be honest, my energy levels are running low to even consider another large project. So,
You're not thinking of doing like a sort of holy trinity of re-engined 70s BL cars. So you could stick the V6 in a maxi.
It's funny you should say that. It has been mentioned. It has been mentioned. Then, it's been mentioned in for a Princess, which has a huge bonnet, and also a Maxi.
Yes.
I have family connections with the Maxi, as I might have said in a previous cast. My old man Bob did have one. So maybe I'll go down that road, but I don't have the time or the money at the moment. So I might stockpile it, or I might just see about selling it. I don't know yet. I'm not sure.
Jag V12 in a Marina.
Oh gosh, can you imagine? Adam at Fabco, who's doing a lot of the work on my Allegro Sleeper project, he's got this beautiful Princess, which he's got the. He bought the Jag.
He's
the Jag.
A beautiful Princess.
Beautiful little Princess. He's got the S-Type. What's he got? A manual S-Type 3-litre V6 engine, drivetrain, suspension, subframes, everything. He's putting in a Princess, and it's effing sweet. And it's going to be an effortless, I'm going to say, 500 horsepower. So
what?
Yeah, because he's putting twin snails on it. Because that engine is, it's the Folds engine, isn't it? Similar to the Noble engine, the Nobless. Therefore, it can be. It has quite a good tuning pedigree. So he's putting two snails on it, and the donor car that he bought, the S Type, was a Manuel. This could be an incredible driver's car.
What does it look like? Is he going to make it look standard?
He can't make it look standard because he's using the subframes from the Jag. And all the aluminium suspension components, so it's a wide arched car.
Okay,
but I think they're going to be sort of Japanese style clip on arches rather than bulbous tubs and tubs of filler style arches. Although he's going, it is going to look nice because it's going to stay beige with a brown vinyl roof, and he's got some bronzy centered mini lights for it. So it's going to be great. Yeah. Honestly, I've already said I want first refusal if he decides to sell, because I think it'll be a wonderful piece.
I'm only disappointed that he's having to ditch the Hydrogas.
Yeah, but you know that he's repurposed so much of the S-Type. That's what's so good about it. And the S-Type's got some great suspension parts. And he said, well, instead of buying aftermarket this and that, he said, I'm just going to use as much of this aluminium cradle as possible. And that's what he's going to do, and so it's going to be exceptionally exotic, high performance beast, which takes us perfectly into a conversation about the new Pagani or Pagani, depending on where you might come from.
Pagani Zondar. Yeah. So new Pagani announced last week. The Utopia.
Utopia. Utopia. Utopia.
I can't figure out whether I like the way it looks. I think I like it more than the Huayra, which I never particularly liked. I thought it looked fat.
Huayra.
Huayra. But I don't... There was a sort of... I mean, not delicacy, but a kind of a bit more subtlety to the Zonda, relatively. I don't know. Somehow it just looked... It looked heavy at the back, but in the right way, because it sort of told you there's a ruddy great V12 back there, and then it sort of had that kind of more scalpely front. And... to me, the car just looked a bit sort of hefty and fat, and this is somewhere in between. It's sort of interesting, isn't it?
I like the detail
on the roof and things.
I'm having a goosey at it now. It's one of those, at first I think it looked a little bit too fussy, but actually maybe I was doing it a disservice. I'm having a second look at it now.
I mean, the Zonda was not unfussy. There was quite a lot going on.
There was.
It was all sort of covered in bloody straps and divots and things, but this is, I don't know, I don't think it helps that they've released the official photos, that it's sort of it looks like a model.
It does look like a model,
painted plastic model.
There's a really detailed model company beginning with an N who I suddenly can't remember, and it looks like one of their models where if you photograph it right you don't really know if it's real. I think it's like Norvec or something like that. Models.
But the basis of this car, for people who haven't seen it, is that it's sort of maximum Pagani, where it's a V12, sort of Mercedes AMG derived V12, but spec'd, bespoke to Pagani's requirements. and Hooked 2. Now, this is a bit weird because they've said they want it to be pure, so it's not got a double clutch gearbox. But what it has got is an X-Track automated box. So I presume that's like a racing box, but it doesn't really... I haven't found it what they've elaborated on. Anyway, it's going to get a 7-speed, inverted commas, proper manual.
Oh, yeah, that...
At some point.
That gearbox from X-Track, if it's the one I'm thinking of, isn't that like the fastest shifting box that's been made?
Is it?
I remember reading about it because it's in something else and I've totally forgotten what else it's in, but it is in something else. They claim that the engine's clean enough to pass California emissions because it's the Mercedes V12 twin snail job, isn't it? It's absolutely incredible 6-litre job.
Yeah.
1,100 newton metres than all that.
In newton metres, it's 864 brake horsepower.
See, that's a lot of horsepower, bloody hell.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's probably as much as you need.
I think it is. It's as much as you need, and it's limited to 99 units, although the term units, I think, always makes it sound... It cheapens what is a very exotic... It's like, units, okay. I'd rather just say vehicles or customers or something like that.
Cars would be a word you could use.
Do you think cars would be a good use? Yeah.
I always bridle slightly at the word vehicles just because it makes you sound like a policeman.
Yeah, I quite like policeman chat because I'm not the kind of guy that does it very often, so it feels a little bit special to me.
It's a weird, that sort of weird, non-committal and euphemistic way of speaking that police people have. And there was a guy once, I was doing a job on something, and I said to the bloke in charge, "Oh, so-and-so's good, isn't he?" And this guy went, "Yeah, he's good, but he talks like a copper." And then once I'd realised that, I couldn't not hear it.
Yeah, this is the
problem.
He
would sort of go, "It's approaching 1 p.m. thinking they might proceed towards the Sainsbury's to acquire some foodstuffs." And he'd be like, why are you talking in that way? That's like, it's like English, but not quite.
Well, how would you... Maybe we could go through some of the details of the utopia in a British policeman style. I don't know.
The new vehicle from the Garni company... Based in the Italy area of Europe.
The suspect, who identifies as Mr. Horatio Pagani, male, white.
Yeah.
The suspect has insisted on not, on persisting with petrol power and nothing other than petrol power. No hybridization has been employed at this point. Utopia, the name given to the suspect's creation that he's attempting to purvey to up to 99 peoples.
Persons, when they say persons.
Sorry, persons.
Persons of interest.
Also, Mr. Horatio Pagani, who identifies as white male, said... that his creation is the result of a development program running for some 6 years and includes in excess of 4,000 styling diagrams and 8 full-scale prototypes. Mercedes have been informed of the fact that they've had numerous engines stolen from their cupboard, the 6-litre twin-turbo AMG example being the favourite. This can spin to 6,700 RPM, which is actually quite low.
It can proceed to a revolution area of approximately 6,700.
Yes.
Revolutions, which
yes,
we have reason to believe are within a minute. I found out why this car maybe looks the way it does.
Why?
Because apparently... The Mr. Pagani, the suspect,
yes,
said that they brought customers in to help with the look of the new car. Now,
really,
I think that's probably a mistake. Imagine the taste of people who can afford a Pagani, but their houses have got loads of marble in them.
It's probably varied. It's probably varied. I think it's a dangerous thing to do because it's a bit like a lot of people think they know what they want, but they don't always.
Exactly.
So I'm not saying that in a smug way, like I know what I want all the time, because I don't. In fact, I'm trying to buy a like a room divider. A retro looking room divider at the moment, and I don't really know how to describe it, so I can't work out how to acquire it.
It's weird, isn't it? It's when you're sort of outside of your comfort zone, because we're redecorating parts of our house at the moment, and there was sort of I know what I don't want.
Yeah.
But the other day I just said to my wife, she went, "What do you want in here?" And I was like, "I just want it to be nice."
Yeah.
But I don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
In the sort of way in my head, the niceness is, you kind of realise interior design is harder than it looks. As indeed, speaking of which, that's another local radio link. The interior of this Pagani, usual sort of, you know, kind of quite overdone Pagani style and lots of shiny metal.
Yeah.
And
it does look tasteful, actually.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? But the passenger side of the dashboard, I was looking at it going, that's quite sort of simple compared to the rest of it. And I realised what it looks like. It looks like the bloody passenger side of a Ford Crown Vic dashboard.
It does.
Which is...
It does, but...
I'm sure that wasn't the design influence, but it looks like
So for me, the driver see all of the beautiful bezel. And how about the passenger, Horatio? What does the passenger get to appreciate? They have, how you say, leather and one output for air. This is it. Okay.
It's solo, focused, just one.
On the eye. So they have one high-rise cylindrical. It looks like a jet engine, doesn't it? For these aircon, these ventilation outputs. There's one in front of the passenger.
And but then, what's the rectangular thing in the corner by the door shut? Is that a vent as well? I thought that was a vent as well.
I think that's one of those things where you put a small cup in, and there's a sensor, and it knows you've put a cup in, and it fills it with cold water.
It drizzles soup.
Well, I don't know. It's not the kind of interior you'd want soup. Oh, and you just hang on. So the driver decides what you're going to consume. And the driver will go, I think today you don't want cold water, you want hot oxtail soup. Right, here we go. Have a really small glass of oxtail soup before we go on the Stelvio Pass.
One of those very thin, crinkly brown plastic cup. Basically, there's a 1980s hospital vending machine built into the passenger side of the dash.
I actually can't. I'm just looking at the photos. I'm trying to zoom in and see.
I wonder if it's a display, because this is what I'm wondering. Well, I'm surprised that that side of the dashboard is so plain relative to the general sort of showtime of the rest of the interior. It's just because you think, well, you know, these days, Ferrari, you can have displays in front of the passenger, can't you?
Yeah.
Tell you speed and revs and all this stuff. And so people have started having a bit of fun with the passenger side, and it's sort of surprising Pagani have just gone, nope.
No.
Vent that looks like a jet engine and a hospital vending machine that pours hot soup over your leg.
While you can stare in envy at the beautiful gated 7-speed Manuel. And also, the centre console doesn't have any touch screens from what I can see. It's got four circular, really nice dials with aircraft style, I think aircraft style kind of toggle switches beneath. There's a real whiff of kind of Paddy Hopkirk auxiliary rally gauge setup going on there. Do you know what I mean? Like in the 60s when you wanted to upgrade your sort of peasant Mini into your more Coopery Mini. It's a sort of like gauge cluster you'd aspire to own, and you buy it out the back catalogue of a motoring magazine. And I'm not saying this because I think it looks rubbish. I actually think it looks fantastic. The only part of the interior which I'm probably not that fond of is the steering wheel. But it's only because it's weirdly not circular, and there's too many exposed Allen heads in it. It looks like the kind of aftermarket steering wheel which was very popular in the Max Power era,
where it was so fussy, too many Allen bolts, too many changes in textures and component, and you're like, can we just have a united front here? I don't want three different
good texture. I
don't want to be spinning the wheel between finger and thumb, and it changes terrain. I don't want that. I want Allen Kantara all the way round, or I want leather all the way round. And I think it was Mercedes or Lexus who were the initial offenders with the half wood steering wheel. I mean, honestly, what an awful. It was dated when it came out. Now, it'd be awful. I'd have to chisel that bad boy off.
No, they're terrible, aren't they? Plasty wood. What did I have? I had a car with that. It wasn't very nice.
Was it your Lexus?
No. Anyway.
I might get you a cover. You can buy those stretch-over covers for steering wheels, very common in the world of the minicab and the Uber.
Yeah.
And you can get
Johnny.
Faux wood on those. I've seen...
Can you?
Yeah, stretchy wood.
Christ.
So, yeah, Pagani, Horatio Pagani's probably emailing us imminently about the soup dispenser machine that isn't on the dash of the passenger side.
Or he's urgently trying to retrofit that because it's a great idea.
Yeah.
What? 864 horsepower car, what you definitely want is some kind of hot fluid dispenser built into the dashboard. That's going to be fine. Something else I've noticed about the interior of the Utopia is that the dials are very far apart. And normally in a sort of sporty car, you'd have the rev counter would be big and central, but there's a digital display in the middle now. I wonder if that can show revs.
Yes.
Because as it stands, the rev counter looks quite small and quite off to the left, and that's quite surprising. I can't remember what it was like in the Zonda. Pagani Zonda.
I'm looking at, there's a lot going on here. The heart of the Utopia is a carbon fibre steel chassis described by the company as Pagani Carbo Titanium HP62 G2 and Carbo Triax HP62, which sounds like a drug that you'd buy in America over the counter, but but we're still not sure what it's going to do long term.
Well, you see advertised on American TV, and it's got an awful lot of very quickly spoken small print at the end, warning may cause fatal urgency, headaches, and strokes. And you just go, whoa, this sounds awful.
Come on a minute. Which all contributes in the front and rear tubular subframes with the chromo steel to make it 1,280 keys.
1,280 kilos?
Yeah.
With a 6 litre V12, and 864 horsepower, it's not going to hang around.
Well, I'm just going to put this out there, Mr. Horatio Pagani. My Allegro is going to be less than 870 kilos and 400 horsepower. So, does that make me far weaker than you? Or does that mean I can take the fight to you? We'll see about that, shall we?
The broadcaster and journalist Johnny Smith today threw down the gauntlet to Horatio Pagani.
Yes.
To come and have a go if he thinks he's hard enough.
That's right. And he came back to me and he said, and this is in an official press release, after being so completely absorbed by this strenuous creative process, the ideals represented by the project have become so intimate to me that any attempt to describe it would have seemed inadequate, said Pagani founder and CEO Horatio Pagani.
Hang on. Any attempt to describe...
Yes. I'll say it again. After being completely absorbed by this strenuous creative process, the ideals representative by the project became so intimate to me that any attempt to describe it would have seemed inadequate. So, in other words, is he leaving the gateway open for all YouTubers that their opening gambit is words cannot describe how I feel right now? Despite the fact that
if you try to describe this car, you'll look like a total prick.
So I'm not going to. I'm just not going to.
Yeah, that just sounds like an excuse. That sounds like I can't be bothered.
Yeah. It does to me.
That's like, so do you ever do this where you say to your kids, how was school? And they go, all right, what did you do?
Oh, nothing. I had that yesterday. And I was like, come on, dude, you're in the second week of secondary school. You've got to, I'm going to need some more information here. But you just got to warm them up a bit. Usually it involves a Bourbon. And then they start to come out of their shell and go, oh, actually, yeah, a really funny thing happened and blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's it. I used to try that with my boy. I'd go, you've got to tell me one interesting thing that happened at school today and I'll give you a biscuit. And that usually worked.
Oh.
So I might try that again tonight.
Did the Huayra sell? Has it been selling well?
I don't know. Shall I have a look on Auto Trader, see how many are on there?
I've never actually seen one. In the reality, I've done. Oh no! Apart from a motor show, but I've never seen.
Have you? Yes, I suppose probably, but
I've never seen a privately owned Huayra. I like the name.
Do you?
Yeah, I do like the name. Utopia. Do you think Utopia is a good name for a car?
I'm not sure.
I prefer.
Feels a bit on the nose somehow.
Yeah, I prefer like 350Z. If I'm honest. I don't know, it just seems to sort of, less pretension.
Fiat Punto.
Quite a lot of pretension in Utopia, isn't it? It's sort of like.
There is. It also, I've just read a book called Utopia Avenue by David Mitchell. It's been out for a while. I was very slow to pick this up, but it's set in the 60s, about a band formed in the 60s. And I found it a profoundly disappointing book, and it really annoyed me how disappointing it was because I'd heard good things about it, and it just didn't click for me. So I'm still off the back of that. And when I heard this car was called Utopia, I was like that bloody book.
Oh.
So, sorry, didn't mean to turn this into a literary review.
No, I think I like it. I'm sensing your disappointment. We don't do enough books on this show. I'm reading the autobiography of I've actually forgotten the name. Miriam Margolyes.
Are you?
Yeah, I am.
Is that sounds like a rollicking read?
There's an incredible amount of referencing to Fellatio, not Pagani. No,
Fellatio.
It's true, honestly. She's, you know what she's like, she's quite outspoken, but yeah, she's quite frank about the amount of,
Anyway, there's a 2013 Pagani Huayra for sale on Car and Classic at the moment for £1.8 million, so...
is there really?
They are out there. It's in the Netherlands, and it is silver and black, and see, that looks, I'm just looking at this with fresh eyes, it looks all right, but it does look fat still. It's just. I mean,
okay,
it,
so are you thinking it's
shame a car, it, but it does look a bit tubby.
Is it sort of Vegas Elvis compared to,
yes,
kind of 50s black leather outfit Elvis?
Yeah,
okay.
And I would. I mean, yeah, and I don't think the Utopia is not quite as, you know, taut as I want. Comeback Special Elvis now, and this is not quite.
Saturday Night Special, but that is
close to death. Is Utopia Elvis, looking,
is Utopia yeah. Saturday Night Special Elvis?
It's not quite there.
No,
I would say
there's some great lines.
When he did that Comeback Special, he looked absolutely amazing, didn't he? I think he just really sort of he came back punching.
I think he'd just had some salads and
I'm trying not to fall into your trap of talking about the life of Elvis based on that Baz Luhrmann Elvis film that was out recently, because after what happened with you and Queen,
go on, say some untruths and then all of the listeners will point the finger at you rather than me.
Yeah, I'm not an Elvis fan, but you're completely wrong, you got it all from a film, you dick. We don't want that to happen again, but I need to apologise sort of to people who were maybe confused about the sudden appearance on our YouTube channel of a song which had no relation to the podcast and seemed out of context. I forgot to tell you about this as well, so you didn't know this was going on. But I was knobbing about. I had loads of writing to do 2 or 3 weeks ago. And as often happens when I've got loads of writing to do, what I actually do is procrastinate.
Yes.
And I've been listening to lots of Italo disco, one of my favourite musical genres, just for sort of giddy thrills of 80s octave bass line synths and very bizarre lyrics that are sort of very kind of not quite always making sense, but somehow charming as a result. And I've been listening to a lot of that, and it's like what I like about Italo Disco is it's sort of done to a formula. The bass line is usually just an octave on a synth sequencer that just goes dunk 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 dunk. And so I was like, rather than do all the work that I'm being paid to do, I will open GarageBand and I will try and make some Italo Disco for my own amusement.
Is this the Fiat Uno?
Yeah, so I made a little loop of Italo Disco and then I just kept fiddling around with it and putting little excerpts of it on Twitter, and then I eventually just worked it up into a whole song. And it's the Fiat Uno song.
I like the Fiat Uno song. I like it.
Well, I finished it. Or it finished after a fashion. I mean, I recorded some vocals on this microphone that we use for the podcast in my shed, so it's very terrible quality. But and I was going to upload it to the Sniff Petrol YouTube, and I cannot for the life of me remember or find the password, and it keeps logging me into a different Sniff Petrol. It's very strange.
Oh, is this Google trying to be clever?
Capricious tit, yeah.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, to help it goes. You. There's two accounts registered. This email address. Which one do you want? And whichever one I say, it puts me into the other one where there's nothing on YouTube. And anyway, so I just went, screw it. I'll put it up on the Smith and Sniff YouTube, because I assume enough people who listen to the podcast follow me on Twitter and will have followed the saga of me going, I'm so busy with work, I'm going to make an Italo Disco track. So anyway, if you are a subscriber to Smith & Sniff on YouTube and you suddenly went, what the merry hell are they doing now? Well, it was just that. Sorry, it was a lost password and I needed to put the
Get it
Italo
somewhere
Disco to
quickly.
Bed. Get it somewhere and then I could move on with my life. So that's why that appeared there. What I also did at the same time is I made an Italo Disco version of our theme tune for the podcast. I'll stick it on the end of this show.
Oh, nice.
Which, again, it's just, you know, it's all to a formula, but a rather sweet retro 80s formula. So I just want to explain, because I imagine there are a few people going, what is this? They haven't mentioned this on the podcast. This is just nonsense, which it is, but there is a context to it. It's just the different one.
I'd like some car chase slap bass theme tune, because you know, where it builds and builds as the chase gets more energetic and dangerous. That's what I quite like. I'd like to slate that for a possibility in the future.
Oh, I also, sorry, just on this note, I also have to say thank you to a listener called Connor. Connor was at the live show, actually, but he's a guitarist, and he sent me a little clip of him playing along to the Fiat Uno song, to the instrumental bit in the middle, as if a guitarist called Alan Murphy, who was the guitarist in Go West and also worked with Kate Bush and was in Level 42.
Bloody hell.
And liked a big sort of twiddly guitar solo. So Connor's recorded himself playing a brilliant twiddly guitar bit over the top of the Fiat Uno song in an 80s styly. It's fabulous. I'll ask him if he's okay with me to stick it on the Patreon.
That's brilliant. I need to listen to that.
I'll send it to you. It's really good.
Does Connor play slap bass as well? Just, I'm asking for a friend. Maybe you. Yeah.
Just send Connor, could you send Johnny just a loop of like 2 hours of slap bass that just you could
that
just,
conjures up a car a chase situation, please. I'd like that. I'd like that very much. I was going to talk. I've delved into the Pagani website, which is really quite wordy. So I'm not. I'm going to climb out of it now. I've realised that Peugeot have just revealed their new 308, the E308, which I think
E308.
Yeah, E308.
So 308, that new 308 with a sort of slightly not quite right front end, but electric.
Yeah. Do you not? And they do. And they do the estate version as well. Are you you're not down with the 308 model? You think the front end's a bit...
Have they done something to the front end of the electric one, though? Because to me it looks a little bit better. It looks a bit less heavy somehow. Or it's just maybe the colour of the car in the photos they've released. It's a light colour.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Usually there's some blue tint on the detail of the grille, and the grille is obviously fared in a bit more.
Yeah.
It's not as handsome as the 508. I still keep going back to the 508 estate. I think it's just such a good looking thing, and it feels special to drive. I like it, really like it.
I've not had the pleasure, but
you need to.
I think
you
508 saloon that lives near my house, and I am always wowed by its looks when I walk past it.
Yeah,
it's a deceptively handsome car.
Did I tell you that my dad, who's not a car guy per se, he messaged me the other day to say that he'd thought he'd seen a new Citroen DS and what was it about? And then we realised he was actually talking about the Citroen C6, you know, the mid-2000s one.
Oh.
Which is obviously not a new car, but my dad thought it might have been. And we were at a local car show a month or so ago, and there was one part there. My dad's really drawn to it. I think I might be. Oh. I think I could get him over the line in one.
That would be amazing.
Is that a good thing to do? Because they are sort of looking for another car on the QT, but my dad does
to go alongside the legendary Golf Cabrio.
Well, the Golf Cabrio has maybe hit a point where, I mean, it's probably worth more than it was a bit, but yeah, he's kind of like, maybe I could just use it a few months of the year, or maybe I could sell it. He doesn't like lots of things hanging around. But yeah, he loves the practicality of a cabrio. It goes against everything that people say about cabrios. My dad says, on the contrary, I can go to IKEA and put loads in it with the roof down, and I can go to a garden centre and take loads of stuff, and then Christmas tree, easy, I can do that. So he doesn't actually use the boot, he just uses the whole inside of the car. It's very clever. Clever guy. Sweet, clever guy.
And do you ever get blindsided, not blindsided, but just sort of thrown off kilter by cars you didn't know existed?
Yeah, I feel like I've not done my job, and but
the
frequency of cars being launched is always high anyway. But then someone will throw you a JDM curveball, and you'll be like, "Oh shit, yeah. I didn't know about that."
But it's not even. I feel like I used to be so across everything, and then so I opened. I don't know. I think it's probably like the latest issue of Evo.
Yeah,
and there was the ad on the inside cover.
Yeah,
is for the new Citroen DS4.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Nice looking car.
Yeah,
have you driven it? Is it drivable yet? Is it actually on the road? I don't know anything about it.
I've not driven the DS4 yet. No, I've driven the new Citroen. C. Hang on, what's the correct title for it? It's a C5X, I think it is. Hang on.
C4. I presume it's all electric because it's called the DS4 E-Tense.
Yeah.
Beg your pardon. It seems like quite a nice-looking car, but I just went, yeah. Where the bloody hell did that come from? I just don't remember them announcing that at all. I don't know anything about it. I presume it's on the usual Citroen, Peugeot, Stellantis platform. But
Stellantis!
Just don't know. Don't know anything about it. I don't know when it came out. I presume it's quite new because they're advertising it in a magazine and everything. But it's just... I don't know. I was just thrown off by it. Same way, I was letting... was it yesterday? I was letting a car come up through a gap in a narrow road, and it was one of those small VW SUVs, and I suddenly went, what the fuck is that called?
What is it called?
T-Cross.
Oh, yeah, the T-Cross, yeah.
I've basically lost track of cars, and I feel like you said, it's not doing your job.
It's almost like we need a working holiday, which involves doing lots of back work. Homework for like cars that you've passed you by in recent times. Should we do that? Because that's a legitimate working holiday. We could do that on expenses.
Expense a trip to like the Caribbean to just read loads of old recent copies of Autocar and
I mean
stuff.
The Caribbean would be nice. I was actually thinking about a place maybe closer.
North Wales.
Yeah, I was thinking like North Wales. And I was going to segue into something else, and I'm a bit scatty today, so I apologise.
No, that's all right. I think I am as well. I don't know. I don't know. I think it's the change in weather or something. I feel a bit useless. I just
feel a bit useless.
I wrote something the other day. Yeah, I wrote something the other day, and I wrote it quite quickly, and it's always nice when that happens. I just went, oh, there we go. I've hit the word limit, and it all came out quite easily. And then I reread it, and I just went, this is drivel. This is absolute dog shit.
Is that when we were WhatsApping one another about comparing the thickness of new Apple Mac laptops with David Bowie?
Yes.
It's because the thinness, the era of thinness of Bowie's.
But then you went full, like, Thin White Duke, like the thinness of Bowie in that BBC documentary from 1974, the Cracked Actor documentary.
Oh,
I mean, that's
the thinnest.
There's no room inside Bowie for his internal organs at that point. No. So Apple could never make a laptop that thin. It's just, it wouldn't be possible. It'd have no battery.
Just two sheets. Just two sheets of paper, isn't it?
Yeah. With cocaine between them.
How did
the Bowie plan diet?
How did designers must marvel at the way Bowie's body was packaged? He could still fully function.
Yeah.
And was a clever. Artistic man.
He was making some of the best music of his career. But yeah, even the people who did the Mini would be going, how did he get all that into there? It's like, where's his heart? It just doesn't seem there's room for anything anymore.
His heart. He wears his heart like a wristwatch on his wrist. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, you were saying how MacBook Airs have got a little bit bigger. So it's got like, it's like the original MacBook Air was like 70s thin white Duke Bowie. And now it's now. Are they like, what, 90s Bowie spec or 80s Bowie?
I mean, still sort of in reasonably good shape, but just not super thin. I thought Air meant super thin, but no, apparently it doesn't. But I don't know, maybe that's it. The Apple MacBook range is like Bowie. It couldn't stay that thin forever because it was medically dangerous.
We haven't even talked about the fact that I'm selling, or my wife is selling, the Suzuki Jimny, and... I was going to actually mention about what is it with motorcycle racers with incredibly penetrating blue eyes that almost look like they could cut things by staring too hard at them.
Was this because we were talking about Charlie Borhol, who's not actually a racer, is he?
He's a motorcyclist. He's a well-known motorcyclist. Yeah. And
Charlie Bor scoring it does have quite intense eyes.
He does. Charlie's Bor nest. He's got really blue, intensive eyes. And then Shaky Byrne, who does all the motorcycle content on the Late Break Show, he's got really blue, intensive, like laser eyes. And then we realised, hang on, Carl Fogarty, well-known racing legend, has got the most penetrating of lasery eyes. So if the three of them were in a room together, or I don't know, a minibus, would something kick off, like sort of Avengers style power, special power? And are they allowed to look at one another?
Dangerous, too.
Do
dangerous.
They get archi?
They'd all just catch fire.
Or just, could they? Are they missing a trick here? They're all into motorcycles. They all got incredibly penetrating eyes. Could they set up their own laser cutting business, but only for high-end motorcycle bespoke parts, race parts, unobtainium parts, and it's
what, just in inscribing?
Yeah, but they work in shifts, so they have like a sort of Faraday cage that they put Carl Fogarty in after 17 cups of tea, and they just go stare at this 5 mil sheet of titanium. Don't fuck it up, Carl, because we haven't got another one. I need you to cut out a special yoke for a racing Suzuki. Yeah. 3, 2, 1, go. Stare at it. Go.
Carl, have you fabbed that exhaust bracket yet? And he'd go, no, let me take a look at it. And
just goes and stares.
Most light engineering companies, he'd mean literally.
He actually just looks at it. I'm just putting my tray in as we speak, on the back of the caddy seats. You know, the hinge trays with the cup holder. That's where my microphone is. And
you're sitting in the back seat?
Yeah, of course I am. Nice. Yeah, enjoying the pano roof. I've even just seen a kingfisher, but I was so professional, I didn't want to talk about it in the middle of talking about Carl Fogarty's laser eyes, so I didn't.
I'd love to see a kingfisher.
Yeah, just seen it. It really, because it's got tinted windows. I don't think it knew I was in the car. Clever. Cleviest.
So that car could actually be a hide as much as anything else. That's quite good.
I bet Chris Packham's got one.
Well, anyway.
Bloody bet he has.
Let's moor this one up. But before we go, I've got three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called the Slake 808 State Show, in which Johnny pursues the Mancunian electronic music pioneers, offering refreshing beverages in hot climates. This week, he's following them around Barcelona with a tray of lemon Fanta. If that's not to your taste, then there's always the Late Break Show. Lots of interesting videos on there, including, as you mentioned, your wife reviewing or saying goodbye to the Suzuki Jimny.
It's, yeah.
Sad times.
It might be sold by the time you listen to this. Who knows?
Yikes.
Yeah, off of Car
and
Classic.
Modified and well
sweet, sweet car. Yeah, sweet, sad times.
Sweet car.
Yeah.
Second thing I've got to tell you is I have various books out. One of them is called Boring Car Trivia 3. It's just some facts about cars. Came to the rescue of two people on Twitter last week who were asking questions about cars, and I was able to go, ahem, that's in my boring car trivia.
Oh, yes, the Citroën DS tailgate.
The Citroën DS tailgate being one of them.
Yeah, I enjoyed that fact. That was good.
So there we are. Anyways, if you haven't got Boring Car Trivia 3, please go and buy Boring Car Trivia 3. That would help me enormously. Thank you. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that one of the animators on Jamie and the Magic Torch was Bernard Sumner out of New Order.
Oh, my gosh. How many people listening to this are going to remember Jamie and the Magic Torch, especially given your recent conversation about fleshlights? I think maybe they could rekindle
Don't
Jamie.
Don't spoil Jamie and the Magic Torch by bringing that into
Sorry.
It. Sorry. Well, Jamie, I thought about this and I thought, well, anyone remember this? And I was like, I think probably there's a chunk of our audience that will. And for those who don't, go and look it up. It was a 70s animated kids series. But Bernard Sumner, the lead singer of New Order and previously the guitarist in Joy Division, before he was in bands, he was an animator.
Wow, I did not know that.
He drew for an animation studio, Cosgrove Hall, I think it was, in Manchester. So yeah, he was one of the people who drew Jamie and the Magic Torch.
Well, then the fourth thing that I need to add on to that short list is if you are a subscriber to this this podcast via Patreon, thank you very much for supporting us via Patreon. It's really, really decent of you. You obviously get earlier access if that's something that you want, although some people say they still don't listen until Monday because it's part of Monday's ritual. But hey, that's up to you. It's your personal decision. And we do have merchandise, although we sold quite a lot of it, but we do have some merch. And
yeah, we need to have a chat about the merch, the next generation, because we've got some ideas.
We have Smith & Stiff Mark II, Series 2 merch.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we will announce, I hope, a new live date very shortly. And as before, if you're one of the patrons, you get first dibs on the tickets.
Just saying.
So that's another little patron bonus. It's a quid a month. You can give us more if you want, but who would, eh, for this, old tits? Anyway, that's quite enough.
Doing the hard sell again, Porter.
I know, again. Someone told me off again last week for being rubbish at marketing. I haven't got my eye on. Anyway, let's wrap this up, but thank you ever so much for listening. We'll do it all again next week. Until then, goodbye.
Bye. Welcome to this podcast called Smith and Sniff, where two friends talk about cars and other things.
Almost.
Welcome to Smith and Sniff, a podcast where two friends talk about cars and many other things.
That was really close.
Oh, fuck.
But it doesn't match with what we... because we've got to say our names.
I'm Johnny Smith. And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
Yay!
Yeah! I'm going to start remembering it.
You did it.